Welcome to the Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio, a time to explore our Catholic faith and find out about ways to share the faith with others. Help create the possibility of an encounter with the person of Jesus Christ in the lives of others by living out the call to the new evangelization and helping fellow Catholics rediscover full life in the Church. The Rediscover Hour starts now.
Hi, welcome to the Rediscover Hour. My name is Alyssa Bormis. I'm sitting in for Jeff Cavins today, and I have some big shoes to fill. So if you don't know me, I'm a teacher at the Chesterton Academy. I'm the author of the Catechism of Hockey. You might see my articles now and again in the Catholic Spirit the title of the thing is Everyday Mercies. I'm stuttering here. Jeff never stutters. Anyway, we have a great show for you today on the Rediscover Hour. We're going to be welcoming guests Terry Kopp, Dr. Teresa Deischer, and also Regan Barklage. Let me just give you a quick rundown. Terry Kopp and Teresa Deischer will be with Sound Choice Pharmaceutical Institute. It's very rich what we're going to be talking about. And Teresa Deischer has an amazing ability to take the complex medical field and put it in language that we'll all understand. And then Regan Barklage, what a breath of fresh air she'll be as well. She has done something nearly impossible. She's been published in Glamour magazine as a pro-life woman. That's unbelievable, and we're so proud of her there. So what I'd like to do first is to bring in Terry Kopp. He's a board member with Sound Choice Pharmaceutical Institute. Terry, welcome, and thanks for coming to the show.
Thank you, Lisa. It's great to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to introduce my wife, Debbie, and my very close friend, to join in this morning briefly. We discovered Dr. Teresa Deischer about 10 years ago. I had a history of 27 years of service with Mother Angelica and EWTN in the marketing department based out of the Twin Cities here. And a friend of mine said that when you're out to Seattle, you need to meet this Catholic scientist out there, Teresa Deischer. And I took them up on their offer, and I was on a daddy-daughter trip with three of our beautiful daughters out to Seattle, and had a chance to meet Teresa for the first time at a coffee shop in Seattle, and that was a life-changing experience, led to a life-changing experience for Debbie and I, as Teresa has become very dear to us. We volunteered for her for the past 8 or 10 years now, both in her for-profit ventures, which will revolutionize stem cell medicine, and in the nonprofit effort of Sound Choice Pharmaceuticals. So she is coming to the Twin Cities.
I heard that she's coming. It's a month from now, October 29th. She'll be with Catholic Parents Online. And if you want tickets or information about it, you can go to CatholicParents.org.
That's correct. Okay. CatholicParents.org, their annual luncheon. It'll be a packed house with over 200 Catholics. Well, non-Catholics are welcome also in attendance there in St. Paul. So go to CatholicParents.org for more information.
Perfect. Well, you mentioned that you met her over a cup of coffee. I'm guessing that a lot of our guests are having, or our audience is having coffee right now. So let's welcome Dr. Teresa Deischer to the air, and we'll all have a cup of coffee together. Dr. Teresa, how are you?
I'm just fine. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. You are the president of Sound Choice Pharmaceutical Institute. And can you give us just a quick overview of what that is?
The overarching mission of Sound Choice is to end human exploitation in biomedical research. Mm. And we do this through public education and also through research so that alternatives are available to replace any biomedical research tools or actual medicines with morally acceptable alternatives.
I think this is such a fascinating topic. One, because if something's prescribed to us, we just take it, not thinking of was it morally reached or not, and that there's such a world behind all of this. And so to start out, can you do us a favor, and let's start with some of the terminology that we'll be using. We thought we would talk about the stem cell research first. Can you just give us the terminology with adult stem cells, embryonic, and anything else we need to know?
Certainly. Embryonic stem cells are stem cells that are obtained by the killing or the destruction of a human embryo, and they take cells from the inner cell mass of a human embryo at the blastocyst stage. Those cells are what are considered pluripotent, and they can become any cell type of the body. They are also very primitive cells, and by nature, when they are taken out of their intended environment in an embryo, they become tumorigenic. And so that's an essential character of those cells. In contrast, adult stem cells are stem cells that are found in every organ of our bodies. And these cells are not as primitive as embryonic stem cells. Therefore, they are not tumorigenic. They don't form tumors. And yet, they have this intriguing property of being able to regenerate tissue.
Fantastic. And the idea of the adult stem cells, I know... I'm curious at this point myself, is can an adult stem cell be taken out of an aborted fetus?
Well, the stem cells that are taken out of aborted fetuses are fetal stem cells.
Okay.
And they are not the same as adult. They're quite primitive. And they have been used to treat patients for several conditions, Parkinson's probably being the one that people might know most about. And unfortunately, what happened in those patients was that the cells tended to ultimately grow out of control and created problems for those patients. The same thing has been observed when fetal stem cells have been used to treat some spinal cord diseases. Ultimately, tumors formed in those patients.
So, Teresa, this is Terry here. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I wanted to ask if you could elaborate a little bit about the work of AVM Biotechnology and a little bit about the insights that have been imparted to you to help eliminate any perceived need to destroy embryos for regenerative medicine or disease treatment.
Well, absolutely. I love to talk about that subject. And the focus at AVM has been to identify hurdles that might limit the outcomes with adult stem cell therapies and develop solutions to that. So what we have done, based on my background in hematology and my experience at Amgen, which is a very large, successful pharmaceutical company, has been to focus on the biodistribution of stem cells. That's a very critical limiting factor for the use of all stem cells to obtain healing or regenerative medicine. And stem cells are very tightly controlled in the body. And so what we want to do is we just want to transiently interfere with that natural process, which normally is a good thing. However, when we want stem cells to target and be retained at high numbers in damaged tissue so that we can see significant healing, we need to just transiently interfere with the body's normal control of that process. And we have a small molecule that we are poised to launch into clinical trials in the second semester of 2017. And what that small molecule does is it transiently blocks this sequestration or storage site for stem cells. And when we do that, we can deliver up to 30-fold more stem cells to a target tissue. And we have a concomitant, very dramatic improvement in functional outcome.
And then what are some of the areas that you would look to treat? I understand it's very widespread, the horizon for the use of the technologies that you've developed.
Well, absolutely. Our technologies have the potential to enhance the outcome of stem cells for any disease. So what we are doing is pursuing a licensing and partnering model where we would license our technologies to stem cell companies working in different diseases. And we've taken this approach because that's the most rapid way to get adult stem cells working optimally and into the clinic where we can be helping patients with heart disease, with liver failure, with kidney failure, after spinal cord injury or stroke. Our technologies have applications to diseases like muscular dystrophy and cystic fibrosis, as well as musculoskeletal diseases, osteoarthritis, joint deterioration. So we have very broad applications, and what we want to do is partner with all the stem cell companies out there so that we can see stem cells working optimally and actually at the bedside and not just in clinical trials.
Well, I've been at this with you for about 8 years now, and I wake up every morning more excited than the last to bring this forward. It's very exciting that a pro-life Catholic scientist has been entrusted with these insights and the understanding of how to bring about the power of healing from within our own bodies. And if they want to learn more, they go to Avion Biotech.
To www.avmbiotech, it's biotech.com, correct.
Perfect. Dr. Teresa, I also know that you do a lot of work with vaccines, and this couldn't be more of a hot topic, that there's this idea of either, yes, I'm going to get my vaccines, or no, I'm not going to have my child exposed to vaccines, but you're in a middle road here of trying to have moral vaccines. Have there ever been moral vaccines before? What has happened to them, and what do you intend to do?
Well, thank you. That is definitely a very hot topic. And we'll just go back in time historically and talk a little bit about this. So when vaccines were first introduced widely, those vaccines were manufactured using animal cell lines. And at that time, that's back in the 60s and the early to mid 70s, we had autism rates that were basically unheard of, 1 in 10,000. And similarly, we had childhood and adolescent blood cancer rates that were similarly low. And what happened in starting in 1979, the manufacturers switched from using animal cells to using cell lines taken from aborted babies to manufacture these vaccines. The vaccines are just in essence of the virus that has to be made in a cell line and a liquid buffer to deliver the virus. But contaminants from the cell line used to manufacture the vaccine always come along in the manufacturing process, and they end up in the final product. Now, when we use chicken eggs, we have chicken DNA in our final product. However, that contaminating chicken DNA is not human. And so we recognize it as foreign, we mount an immune response, and we eliminate it. In contrast, when the manufacturers use aborted fetal cell lines, the contaminating human DNA in that final product is unfortunately human. And because of that, science knows that there are two potential very adverse consequences to those contaminants. The first being that that since the DNA is not the child's own, the child could have an immune response to it. And yet, the DNA, since it's human, contains portions that will be very similar to portions of the child's own DNA. And therefore, an immune response to the contaminating human fetal DNA can end up turning against the child's own body in an autoimmune response, potentially attacking the brain during those critical years of brain formation and remodeling that occur from birth to about 3 years of age. So this is one known adverse response. And the second well-known potential adverse response is that the fragments of human DNA, human fetal DNA, contained in the vaccines are known to be readily taken up by stem cells, where they can insert and cause mutations. And these mutations can lead to malfunctions like diseases such as autism, which is at epidemic levels right now, or diseases such as blood cancers, which are also at elevated levels in our children and our adolescents today, levels that were not seen prior to this manufacturing switch.
You know, you just answered a question for me that I had wondered for some time, and so I'm guessing it's for our audience as well, is that I always wondered, well, wouldn't the human tissue in it be better for us because we're human? And wouldn't the animal be worse because it's animal? But that this idea of the body can flush out the DNA, as you said, I believe it was a chicken egg, that it can flush that out. That it's remarkable just hearing that much from you.
Well, you know, absolutely. And, you know, it might seem at face value, well, better to have human. Well, no, because the contaminants can be dangerous. And when they're not human, we have immune responses to them, and we eliminate them. And they don't pose dangers, actually, to us to be taken up and cause mutations because it's chicken DNA, and it will never be taken up. We're never going to grow a chicken wing or a cow tail from having animal DNA presented to our bodies. However, in contrast, the human fetal DNA is quite dangerous, and science has established unequivocally the dangers of these contaminants.
It's amazing. Well, we are going to take a quick break right now on the Rediscover Hour, but we'll be right back with our guests, Dr. Teresa Deischer and Terry Kopp. Rediscover.
Have you seen how hard some businesses try to prove they're socially responsible, like it's a new idea? Well, Catholic United Financial, based right here in St. Paul, has been doing it for nearly 140 years. They consider folks members, not just customers or account numbers. Catholic United is a not-for-profit. They transform profits into purpose, bringing together members, employees, and volunteers to pursue their mission. Grants for local schools and parishes, post-secondary scholarships to members. They even have a disaster recovery team. Their annual Catholic Schools raffle for over 90 schools in the Upper Midwest has raised millions for Catholic education. So when you buy life insurance or a retirement product from Catholic United, you're not only protecting your family, you're also providing for the greater good of your community. Like that idea? Give your local sales rep a call. In Lakeville and Burnsville, that's Rick Mathewitz. Elsewhere, go to CatholicUnited.org and type in your zip code to find your local rep. Catholic United Financial. Every step, every journey, we're there for life.
Come with your light and fill up my heart.
Hi, this is Alyssa Bormas. Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm your guest host today. We've been having a marvelous conversation with Dr. Teresa Deischer. She's with Sound Choice Pharmaceutical Institute. She'll be here on October 29th. You really must go to see her. She'll be with Catholic Parents Online. You can get information at catholicparents.org. And also, I'm here with Terry Kopp, who is a board member for Sound Choice. Dr. Teresa, we were just talking about the vaccines. And one of the things when I was knew that you'd be on the show, I dug into your website, and it is just a marvelous place for information and easy to understand. I know one of the things that you have is information for vaccines.
Absolutely. So we have a list of vaccines that are made using the aborted fetal cell lines, and alternatives that parents can ask for to make sure that their child is receiving a vaccine that is morally aligned with their conscience, as well as a vaccine that does not present the dangers of contaminating human fetal DNA. And, you know, I think one of the critical questions that people ask when they hear this information is, well, why did the FDA allow this? Didn't they know that this could be dangerous?
Mm-hmm.
And we have access to meeting minutes from the FDA going back decades. And indeed, the FDA was very concerned about the use of human fetal cells and the potential dangers of autoimmunity or mutations to the children. Unfortunately, instead of doing actual safety studies, the scientists conducted what they called intellectual experiments.
Mm.
And they determined intellectually, by thinking about this, that while this poses a danger, the actual, you know, number of children who would be harmed was so low that a trillion children would have to receive vaccines before we would see these outcomes. And this is just all based on thinking about this and making assumptions and doing some calculations. They did the same thing for gene therapy trials, and they came up with this number, well, one in a trillion children could be harmed. But when the clinicians actually went forward and treated the children with the gene therapy, the number was 4 out of 9. 4 out of 9
wow.
Children developed cancer, not one in a trillion. And so we have a real-life experience where we know that it's not adequate for scientists to think and to assume what the actual numbers of children harmed would be. They need to do real hard safety studies, and they have never done that.
So, Teresa, this is Terry here. Again, we have about 5 minutes left in this segment with you, but I wanted to ask you, because what I consistently hear is the frustration in the parents' voices when they're discussing these items with their pediatrician or with their nurse practitioner, and they're, you know, these vaccines are big profit centers for the doctors. And I know you are not anti-vaccine in as such. You know, you want to bring back good vaccines. What advice do you have for the parents besides going to soundchoice.org and learning more about this and getting the chart that's available at that website, soundchoice.org, that can help them to understand if there's alternatives for some of these vaccines? I mean, parents really suffer sometimes taking their children into the doctor's offices.
Well, they do. And I think that the most important thing is that parents need to voice their concerns and not be afraid, not be intimidated. So we have, unfortunately, a system that's been put into place where pediatricians are reimbursed for treating our children, not based on medical care or examining our children, but on the number of vaccines that they administer. It's a very unfortunate system, and the pediatricians can often feel that their hands are tied. However, that was a system that was put into place with reimbursement and payment schedules from insurance and from, you know, the government in the case of Medicaid. And we can change those policies. So we can create a system where pediatricians are, again, paid for being doctors, not for administering shots. And we also have the means, if we make our objections known and we do it consistently and we demand alternatives, we could have moral alternatives within a matter of months. This is not something that is impossible or even really difficult. The reason we don't have alternatives is because we don't demand them.
That's exactly right. So, you know, going to soundchoice.org and informing your neighbors and your fellow parishioners is a very important part of this, is to become educated. And also Children of God for Life is cogforlife.org is a very valuable resource. Their Facebook page is outstanding for parents that are interested in learning more. But and also I notice here that there's a shingles vaccine is very heavy in foreign human DNA contaminants from an aborted baby. And there is good news. There's a new shingles vaccine coming out soon, it says here, by GSK, that will be available shortly. Is that the case?
That is true. GSK has an alternative shingles vaccine that is manufactured in yeast cells, not the aborted fetal cells, and that should be shortly available. We also hope that they will develop that same vaccine for chickenpox to replace the aborted fetal manufactured chickenpox vaccine. That's the only vaccine currently available in the U.S. So the virus that causes chickenpox and shingles is the same virus, and therefore the vaccine has applications to both indications.
And so can you remind us again of some of the major troublemakers, so to speak, in the vaccine world? I'm speaking about the MMR2, the chickenpox. What else do parents need to be concerned about right now?
Well, I think the vaccine that should have great concern for the parents is the Pentacell vaccine that's typically administered to children at 2, 4, and 6 months of age. And one of the components, there are 5 viruses in that vaccine, and the polio virus is manufactured in aborted fetal cells. There are alternatives available. Instead of having the Pentacell, parents could request Pediarix and a separate Hib vaccine. So that's a vaccine where alternatives are readily available. It's given to children at very young ages. And what has happened since that vaccine was introduced in 2008 is that the age of onset of autism has come down dramatically from 18 months of age, typically after getting the MMR2 or the chickenpox or the hepatitis A vaccines, to 8 to 9 months of age. While many scientists out there think, oh, we're just getting better at diagnosing autism, that's absolutely not the case. What we're doing most likely is giving autism to our children at younger ages because we use that Pentacell vaccine.
This is just amazing. I love this information, and I think as I think of our audience, how to write this all down would be nearly impossible in this hour. So can you explain again about where your chart is on your website that shows the healthy alternatives or the moral alternatives to the vaccines that are currently used?
Our website is www.soundchoice.org. And if you go to our website, I'm opening it up right now, you can see a button that says Vaccine Card. And yeah, if you click on that, that should open the list.
I'm trying it right now. We've redone our website. So,
well, it's, I have the list in front of me, and mm-hmm. it is so clear. If you're a parent and you think, oh, this, I just can't keep this all straight, it's so clear. You can use it as a checklist. The aborted fetal cell line products are in red. The ethical alternatives are in blue. It's marvelous.
So we look forward to your visit to the Twin Cities. Teresa, coming up here in just a month. Teresa's birthday was yesterday. She's well protected under the
archangels,
Michael, Gabriel, and Raphael. And people can come out on October 29th, a Saturday, around noontime. Go to catholicparents.org to learn more and hear a lot of this in person from this preeminent scientist in the world today, Teresa Deischer.
Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure to be with you.
What a joy. And we are going to go to a break again. We're here on the Rediscover Hour. We'll be right back.
Behold the band, A Catholic Vision of Male Spirituality, from Deacon Harold Burke Sivers.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about when I was writing that book was the passion of the Christ. Right when he's getting ready to start the way of the cross, they put the cross on his shoulders. And if you notice, it's just a second, he actually embraces the cross before they start moving toward Calvary. And I was saying to myself, wow, you know, we as men, we could really imitate what Christ did there. All of us are given crosses in our lives. But, you know, we have responsibility that comes to us from God to embrace that and to recognize and live with courage and conviction the meaning of our fatherhood every single day of our lives.
Jeff, good morning.
I love the topic. It gets me so motivated. I think there is sort of a movement taking place slowly, but I think it is going where men are getting fired up about for faith.
Talk radio.
Talk radio
for Catholic.
For Catholic life. Relevant, relevant radio.
Lord of power, Lord of might, God of every age. His good, it is right.
Hi, welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm your guest host today, Alyssa Bormas. And we have another great guest. I'm over the moon to welcome Regan Barkledge. Regan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Oh, thank you for coming. You are the Midwest Regional Director for Students for Life. Can you just fill us in on what is Students for Life?
Students for Life is a national pro-life organization. We work with over 1,000 pro-life student groups across the country. And we just specialize in training these students, helping them to make the best impact that they can on campus, spreading the truth to abortion and offering alternatives to students as well.
Well, and one of the things that you've done, I mentioned it in the introduction at the beginning of the hour, you've done something that is unheard of, really, is gotten an article published in a very secular magazine, Glamour Magazine. I love the title of it. Yes, I'm pro-life, but I'm not a stereotype. And I want you to just explain what you mean by that and how that fits in with the work that you're doing.
Sure. Well, you know, every day when I'm out on campus, I feel like students have this view of someone that I'm not. They think that I'm going to condemn women. Mm-hmm. You know, for their decisions, or, you know, harass them or call them horrible names, because unfortunately, the pro-life movement does have those people, and that's really sad, but that's not who I am. That's not who Students for Life is, and that's not, I would say, who the modern-day pro-life movement is either.
Right.
So I just, you know, I'm not frustrated by any means by having to explain myself over and over, but I think it's kind of, in a way, I guess it is kind of frustrating that people have this view. And, you know, I just tell them, I'm just like you. I want to help women. We have that common ground. I want to help women, but abortion is not a way to help her. And I'm going to help you in a compassionate way and, you know, help her through this process and even after her pregnancy. So I think breaking that stereotype is so important because the other side just has this negative view of us.
Well, one of the things that we're always hearing about is empowering women, but sure. And we hear about it from the secular side constantly. And I love in your article that you talk about society telling you, well, you can't go to school and be a mom. You can't do this and be a mom or do that and be a mom when you're young. And you talk about how that's not empowering for women at all. And you're really the one that's empowering them.
Yes, I am just, it's so degrading that mm-hmm. society tells women, you can't do this. You're not strong enough. You're not old enough. You're not rich enough. And you can't do this alone. And I don't get it because, you know, society wants women to have all these rights, but at the same time, they're taking them away. And I want the pro-life movement to be seen as the empowering side. You are strong enough. You can do this, and we're going to help you so you don't have to make a decision that you may regret.
I love the "we're going to help you" part, and you're serious about that. One of the things that I found just great, again, reading about this, is that during finals week, you have babysitting for the women, the mothers who have babies. You have babysitting for them.
Yes. One of our, an arm of Students for Life is our Pregnant on Campus initiative, something that I just love so much because a lot of times people on campus say that we're just pro-birth, that we don't care about women, we don't care about the children. And our Pregnant on Campus breaks that stereotype too. So we work with school administration and with students on campus and help make education something that's not a difficulty for moms. You know, is there lactation rooms on campus? Are there diaper decks? You know, where can women drop off their children when they go to class? And, you know, finals is just one of those things that's hard for women when they're trying to study and they maybe have a baby or a toddler running around. So our students who participate in Pregnant on Campus, they usually rent out or reserve a space on campus and they take shifts and babysit for the students. And some of our students even provide meals for moms. So then when a mom will pick up her child, she'll give them like a freezer meal or something that she can just heat up in the oven when she gets home.
How do students get involved in helping for something, for these things, the babysitting, the meals? How do a regular student, how do they just get involved?
So they can join their Students for Life group at their school. And if anyone wants to find a Students for Life group and they're not sure if they exist on their school, go to studentsforlife.org and we can connect you. But a lot of times, most of our college groups are now signing on to this Pregnant on Campus initiative. Mm-hmm. And if that's something, even if you're pro-choice and you're listening, this is something that everyone can work together on. The feminist groups love our Pregnant on Campus initiative. So you can just work on that side of it. And then if you're not comfortable talking about abortion, this is a great spot for you.
I love that you've said this, that it's for everyone to help out. And this is a common meeting ground that we're going to help other women who wouldn't otherwise be able to do this. We're just helping women out, women helping women.
Yes.
I love that. It's fantastic. You know, the other thing you just mentioned, like the diaper decks, and what you do is you teach students to lobby the school for parent-friendly options. And I love that you teach them to do it, not that you go and do it for them. And maybe this then awakens something in them to think, hey, I can lobby, I can get things done.
Exactly. And this is something that the school administration, sometimes they don't realize it or they just don't even think about it. There's something that's often overlooked. Or we don't have this problem here, you know?
Right.
And so students, when they, I think it's really empowering for them to see the difference that they're making at their school. And not just that, but when someone comes up and, you know, stereotypes them as being pro-birth, they can say, actually, you know, we're working with pregnant and parenting students on our campus right now, and you should help us out, you know? And I just think it's a really great way for the groups to be recognized as the new pro-life movement and the fresh and just compassionate movement that we are.
The compassionate part. Now, You don't know this, and some of the listeners will know this here about me, but if not, I'll just say it, is that I had two abortions. One was from rape, and abortion is not the answer for rape. And one of the things you just spoke about is the compassion, and that you have compassion for women who have had abortions. One of the questions that you ask them is so simple and just stunning. How are you coping? And I have to tell you, when I read that question, I thought, this is perfect. And even if in the minute you asked me, how are you coping, I probably would have just said, I'm fine. But that the word coping would have stuck with me. And sort of, I would have to answer that to myself over and over and over. Coping. Tell me about the work you're doing with women who've had abortions.
Yes, and thank you for sharing your story. I just feel so strongly in my heart that women who've had abortions and men who've had, you know, were there during their significant other's abortion. You guys are the voice because you have been hurt by abortion. And you can, your voice is the strongest in telling people, this is what happened to me. So I really appreciate you sharing your story. We work with women and men who've had abortions by referring them to post-abortion healing. You know, I just can't tell you how many times people come up to me and they're still hurting. Mm-hmm. And society's told them, why are you hurting? It's just a procedure. It's like getting your wisdom teeth out. Like, there's no reason to be upset. So these women and men are sitting in silence, suffering behind closed doors. They have no idea that this healing is even out there for them. And so we need to be the ones advertising for this. And so we have a lot of resources that we have out on tabling or, you know, subtle ways like drop cards and such. Usually this age, though, I would say in college, women are still kind of suffering. They're not willing to really step up yet. But, you know, at least they have the resources there to where they can, you know, choose to go through that when they're ready. And just so people are aware that those resources are out there. So many people don't know that that exists.
Reagan, I'm sorry. That's exactly it. That usually when you've had an abortion, the sort of the normal way, although there's exceptions to it, is that you sort of have this numbness for years even. But I'm telling you that question, how are you coping, is a great question. I want everybody, if you meet somebody who's had an abortion and they tell you about it, how are you coping? And that question could be life-changing for somebody, and that alone is a feeling of post-abortive men, women and men who've been, who supported the abortion, that being alone was a constant feeling and to come to this. Tell me about some of the surprises you've seen in women or one of the great joys that you've witnessed.
You know, I just love it when people come up to me on campus and share their stories. Like, you know, I was born at 26 weeks or, you know, if they say my mom was told that I was going to have Down syndrome and, you know, I ended up not having it. And what if I did have it? What difference would that have made? And it's just interesting to see people's stories come forward and why they are pro-life or how they've experienced it in their past. But I think the greatest joy is when we enlighten other students who haven't been exposed to the truth. Mm. Because in a way, I feel, you know, kind of like we won. So many times people beat us to it on the other side. They've brainwashed our society into having this false view of what abortion really is. And a lot of times people are just closed off and they don't want to hear it because they think we're lying to them about abortion. So I think that that's a great joy when people are like, wow, I had no idea. And now they are empowered and energized to spread the truth to their family and friends. It's just a continuous cycle. Word of mouth is the best way to end abortion, I think. Just educating people, talking about the issue, posting on social media, and just enlightening the passion within you, I think is great.
What are some of the tools that you use when you do talk to someone? What do you begin the conversation with, and where do you sort of lead it to? to break down what's been, in essence, brainwashed into them?
Sure. So Students Life has a couple different ways. One of them is we go into schools and we give trainings. A lot of times we'll go into different classes. We can do assemblies. But most of the time those are private schools where students are usually being taught the truth behind abortion. But in regards to public schools, especially public universities, we use a lot of displays. So for instance, I'm traveling around with one right now called The Cycle of Corruption, and it just talks about how the different political parties stand on abortion and how the number one abortion provider, Planned Parenthood, receives funding through the government, and we as taxpayers are funding Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. So those are ways where people stop. They're attracted to how, you know, the visuals, usually they stop to talk mm-hmm. to us, and then we can have a one-on-one conversation, just a very normal conversation. No one's upset or yelling, and we can just explain the truth behind it all.
I like that you've just said this, and it goes right back to the title of your Glamour magazine article. Yes, I'm pro-life, but I'm not a stereotype. There is the stereotype that the pro-life side is yelling, and this is it's not what I've experienced, but it's what's promoted by the secular media. You've had problems trying to overcome what the secular media has portrayed, even about you or the work you're doing. And what keeps you going every day in the face of the whole work against you?
Sure. So I'm going to tell you a story. When the way this whole Glamour article came about was I was approached by HBO to do a documentary called Abortion Stories Women Tell. And I went through with it, having the idea, though, that it probably was going to be biased towards the pro-abortion movement. And it was. But when I went to New York City to the Tribeca Film Festival for the premiere, I just cried the entire time because I was just really hurt that these people had followed me for a year on and off. And instead of showing the work that I did, they focused on the protesters outside of this abortion mm-hmm. facility in Illinois who weren't even in the film. They just showed them. And that's who then I was classified as, because I'm the pro-life person and therefore I'm associated with them. These protesters outside this facility aren't the compassionate and sidewalk counselors that we typically see. These ones yell at women horrible things, show graphic images, something that I don't agree with. And so I was just really disturbed by that. But instead of getting upset and just handling a different way, I decided, well, I'm going to tell people who I really am. And so I wrote this blog post, and then Glamour saw it and wanted me to do an article for them. So I think by just telling people in a compassionate way, this is not who I am, this is what I do. Prove to people who you really are, because unless you show them and have the actual actions and are helping people, no one's going to believe you. So I just prefer to take that energy and put it into helping people, and that's how I'm going to make a difference.
I think this is so fantastic. I thought of this earlier, of our guest earlier, that she's in a beautiful sense dispensing hope. And that's what I am getting from you as well, that this hopefulness. And what do you have to say to the youth today about the hope that there is to end abortion?
Well, first of all, abortion numbers are the lowest since Roe v. Wade was decided, and I think that is huge. We are still losing significant amount of lives, and that's very tragic, but we are still making a difference. Those numbers are decreasing. The number of abortion facilities are extremely low. I think it's less than 700 last I checked. So gradually we are making a difference. I, like everyone else, hoped, you know, that abortion would be legal tomorrow. But, you know, we are making steps to overturn Roe v. Wade. And it's because we are educating students. We have people that have been hurt by abortion coming forward. We have 4D ultrasound now. You know, science is on our side. We can't be lied to anymore. Mm-hmm. The truth is coming out. And that's how we're going to end abortion. And promoting the alternatives, you know, we just need to show people back alley abortions, they're not going to happen. We're going to be promoting the alternatives. We want women to have help. So by advertising for those, showing women where they can go for care during and after their pregnancy, so they don't have to resort to abortion.
Perfect. And to never forget, it's the one by one as well. We're working on big things, but it's the one by one encounter with that woman who is having a crisis pregnancy.
Yes, I love it. Yes.
Perfect. Well, it has been an absolute joy to speak with you today. It's Reagan Barklage of the Midwest Regional Director of Students for Life. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. We're going to take one more quick break on the Rediscover Hour, and we'll be right back with you.
Rediscover. Here's a message from Dr. Kevin Ferdinand, headmaster of St. Agnes School.
October is Respect Life Month, and at St. Agnes, respecting life is part of all we do. Esteemed theology teacher Mr. Fred Blonigan has been leading classes in prayer for the unborn since 1987. He has also led an active pro-life group since then. That's thousands of students in the past 30 years, regularly praying for the protection of all human life. It's our way of offering spiritual support for the culture of life. When you walk our halls, you see athletes in letter jackets sporting pins of an unborn child's precious feet. And you'll find St. Agnes families opening their hearts and homes to adopt children, all the while demonstrating their limitless love and answering the prayers of so many. Help your child become a student of the Gospel of Life. Consider sending your child to St. Agnes.
Join us on October 13 for a K-12 open house at 6:30 p.m. or learn more at stagnesschool.org.
Truth begs to be taken for the next time. All faith is shaken, we find, as all things are made right in time.
Hi, welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm your guest host here today, Alyssa Bormis. And I've had some great guests on, but someone you haven't heard from yet, Paul Sadek, is here.
You just can't get rid of me. I'm sneaking in the back door. Lots of things going on around the Twin Cities. The Office of Evangelization and Catechesis, in partnership with the Siena Symposium for Women, Family, and Culture, present Women, Woman, and Man, Complementarity as Mission. Shall we try that again? Woman and Man, Complementarity as Mission. It's on Wednesday, October 5th, 7 to 9 p.m. in the Wolf Alumni Hall in Anderson Student Center at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul. Come hear Dr. Deborah Savage and Dr. Greg Bataro speak on what do both science and scripture have to say about the battle of the sexes. Engage in roundtable discussions on the topic. The event is free and open to the public. Free will offering accepted. For more information, visit the events page on rediscover-faith.org.
And don't forget the world-famous International Pilgrim Virgin statue of Our Lady of Fatima is here. She'll be traveling worldwide since 1947. She's been doing that. And she's on a historic two-year journey across America, March 2016 to December 2017. And this is to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the apparitions at Fatima. She'll be visiting more than 100 dioceses in 50 states. And the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis is participating in the tour. It'll be this October 8th through 13th. And to find out where the host parishes are, please visit the events page on the Archdiocesan website, archspm.org.
Those who have experienced the death of a baby before or after birth are warmly invited to attend the annual Mass of God's Children, 7 p.m. Tuesday, October 11th, 2016. That's at Nativity of Our Lord Catholic Church on Stanford and Pryor in St. Paul. This Mass has been held every year since 2004, sponsored by the Nativity of Our Lord Parish and the Nativity Council of Catholic Women. For more information, call 651-698-5554.
Parents and grandparents, the Office of Evangelization and Catechesis invites you to a workshop to learn about resources for passing on the faith to your children and grandchildren. On Thursday, October 13th at the Hayden Center in St. Paul, come to hear Julia Dauphine speak on learning how to use the latest resources and creative ideas to keep your young children inspired and engaged in the Catholic faith. The workshop runs from 5:30 to 7 p.m. There's a light dinner. It'll be there's a free will offering. And for more information, you can again visit the events page on rediscover-faith.org.
And Thursday, October 13th, 5 to 8 p.m., Team Vianney invites men in grades 9 to 12 to meet for dinner with college seminarians to hear a short, dynamic talk on our Catholic faith and to participate in the Mass with seminarians and university students at St. John Vianney College Seminary at the University of St. Thomas campus. For more information, visit the events page at archspm.org. And what is coming up in 2 weeks on the Rediscover Hour?
Well, we have on October 14th, you'll hear from guest host Patrick Conley, who will be talking with Father Agustino Torres, the Director of Evangelization for the Franciscan Friars of Renewal and the co-founder of Catholic Underground. He will also be talking to the award-winning recording artist Sarah Groves. She'll be a special guest at the upcoming Abrea Pregnancy Resource Celebration Banquet. And also, you'll be hearing from the Executive Director of Abrea, Lisa Schmitz.
The Rediscover Hour is heard every Friday morning at 9, Saturday evening at 6, and Sunday morning at 9 on Relevant Radio 1330. You can find show audio archives at rediscover-faith.org and at relevantradio.com, keyword rediscover. The Rediscover Hour is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis in cooperation with Relevant Radio. Rediscover.